as we walked on, twisting so I couldn't tell where they led. A handful of statues peered out of their leafy disguise. Strange fruits hung from some of the trees, slowly ripening before they fell to the ground. The smell was strange, almost heady. I took a breath as the wind shifted and regretted it instantly. The smell grew sour, utterly vile. And yet it was oddly familiar. I wondered absently if some of the fruits were used in potions. Rolf caught up with us. "That's the edge of the walls," he said, pointing. His voice was hushed, although I have no idea who he thought would overhear. The sound of insects buzzing through the trees was overwhelmingly loud.
"Can you see the wards?"
I nodded. I could see the stonework at the end of the path. The walls were lower than before. I could have climbed over them without difficulty. Yet they weren't unprotected. The wards were invisible to the naked eye, but I could see them through my spectacles. A real magician wouldn't have been able to see them either, yet they've been able to sense them. I wondered, as we moved closer, if I actually had an advantage. I could see the spell form and the ward structure in far greater detail than any magician.
"As long as I have the spectacles," I reminded myself.
I touched my earlobe gingerly. The pain had largely faded, but it still ached. Without them, I wouldn't even sense the ward until it was too late.
"You came,"
a dry voice said. I looked up to see another upperclassman standing there. Two more stood behind him, their faces nervous. I understood. Getting caught as they tried to sneak out of the school would get them laughed at. Nothing more.
"Welcome."
Rolf put a hand on my shoulder.
"Can you weaken the ward?"
I studied the ward for a long moment, then nodded tersely. I'd have to work fast. The longer we stayed here, the more likely someone would come to investigate. I had no idea how well Rolf could spin a story, but I didn't think there was any good reason for four upperclassmen and three lowerclassmen to be in the same place. It wasn't as if Rolf was my brother, having a private chat with his sister. Someone would definitely ask a lot of hard questions.
"Be careful," Rose murmured.
I nodded as I went to work. The ward was beautiful in a way. I could see magic ebbing and flowing around the walls. And yet, it was clearly weak. It had been designed to provide a deterrent rather than an actual barrier. The other wards, the ones designed to stop people entering the school, were far stronger. I could see them too. They wouldn't turn on us as long as we were actually leaving. And we might be in some trouble if we got caught between them, I thought. We'd be stuck until someone came to get us. "This should tear a hole in the wards, just for a few seconds," I informed them, once my object of power was in position. I didn't think the ward was directly monitored. If it was, we were in trouble. Bending the ward out of shape would probably not set off an automatic alarm, but a living mind would definitely notice. "Get ready to get over the walls and out." Rolf moved forward.
"Do it."
I pushed the object of power forward. The ward sparkled into visibility, a sheet of blue light that danced in front of us. I pressed harder, bracing myself. A device of power would have shattered at this moment, unable to cope with the feedback. But an object of power... I heard someone breathe an oath behind me, a word I wasn't supposed to know, as a gap appeared in the wards. It rapidly grew big enough for a grown man.
"Now,"
Rolf said. His voice was sharp, different. I glanced back, just in time to see him slam a stunner hex into Aiken. Aiken tumbled, hitting the ground with a terrifying thud. Rose fell a second later, blasted down by one of Rolf's friends. I grabbed for the speller in my pocket, but it was too late. Rolf brought a small club down on my head. And I knew, as I fell into darkness, that I'd made a terrible mistake. Chapter 22. My head hurt. I fought my way back to wakefulness through a haze of pain. My memories were a jumbled mess. Something had happened, but what?
A potions explosion? Another potions explosion? Or something else? Welcome back, an unfamiliar voice said. Panic shot through my mind. Open your eyes. I tensed as my memories snapped into place. Rolf had lured me to the walls, talked me into opening the wards, then he'd hit me. And then, where was I? Rolf had to be out of his mind if he thought he could kidnap me. Where were Rose and Aiken? What had happened to them? Did Rolf really want two of the most powerful families in the city for enemies? My eyes opened slowly. I was lying on a comfortable bed in an unfamiliar room. A young woman, probably about 19, was sitting by my bedside, watching me through worried eyes. I didn't know her, which meant... I wasn't sure what it meant. She wore a long black shirt and trousers, a style that had never quite gone out of fashion among Shallot's magicians. And her hair fell down her back and brushed against her waist. I studied her, thoughtfully. She looked Hang Chao-ese, with almond dark brown eyes, but her face was pale enough to suggest she was mixed. The child of a sailor and a local woman, perhaps. There simply weren't many other Hang Chao-ese in the city. And a magician... I wondered grimly if she really was a trained magician. It was illegal to dress like a magician without proper training, but kidnapping was also illegal. Wherever I was a long way from home. I could be on the edge of the city, I thought slowly, or maybe in a nearby country home. I apologize for the rough treatment, the girl said. Her accent definitely suggested Shallot, although there was a hint of something different. Please rest assured that it was I who tended to your wounds, removed your remarkable artifices and dressed you. I looked down at myself. My uniform was gone. Instead, I was wearing a simple white nightgown that itched against my skin. I felt naked without my protections. She'd taken everything, even the dispeller. And I'd been kidnapped. I swallowed hard as the implications struck me. If I was behind a set of sealed wards, it was unlikely I'd ever be found. And how long, I asked myself, was I asleep? Panic bubbled at the back of my mind. I forced it down ruthlessly. Thank you, I managed. My voice sounded croaky. My throat was dry. Who are you? Call me Feruza, the woman said. It's as good a name as any. And definitely not your real name, I thought. Feruza had been a popular name once upon a time, before Queen Feruza committed some kind of treason against her husband. I didn't know the details, but she must have done something terrifyingly bad. The name had gone out of fashion with remarkable speed. Who are you, really? I looked around the room. It was a simple bedroom, bare stone walls, no windows. The only illumination came from a lantern hanging high over my bed. There were three doors, one made of solid metal, the other two made of wood. I guess that one led to the bathroom, but the other two were a mystery. There weren't even any runes as far as I could see. The walls were completely bare. It was a prison designed for someone without magic. There's no way out, Feruza told me calmly. This place is very secure. Oh, I said. I forced myself to think. You do realize that my family will be looking for me. I'm afraid they have no conception of where we've brought you, Feruza said. She leaned forward threateningly. There's no way they'll find you here. I swallowed hard. I was alone. I was defenseless. I didn't even know where I was, and I doubted she'd tell me if I asked. Knowledge was power. A bitter swell of defeat threatened to overcome me. She could simply use magic to make me do whatever she wanted, if she wished. I couldn't even jump her without being frozen mid-leap. My family will pay for my return, I said, trying not to panic. Dad would ransom me, wouldn't he? I was sure of it. Alana might be pleased at the thought of me never returning home, but no one else would agree. He will... He can't pay what we'd want, Feruza told me. You're our servant now, our slave, and the sooner you come to terms with that, the better. I stared. Me? A servant? A slave? It was unbelievable. And yet it had happened. Feruza stood. Get up, she ordered. She nodded towards one of the wooden doors. Use the washroom if you wish, and then I have some things to show you. I didn't move. I'm not your servant. Feruza snapped her fingers. The bed lurched, then tipped on its side. I rolled over and fell, landing hard on the stone floor. It felt cold and hard against my bare skin. Get up, Feruza repeated. I will not ask again. I glared at her. I wanted to resist. I wanted to force her to pull me to my feet, but it was clear I had no choice. Moving as slowly as I dared, I stood and tottered towards the washroom. It was simple, very simple. A bath, a shower, a wash basin, and a single mirror. I peered at my own reflection, trying to guess how long I'd been asleep. My hair, hanging down in an unwashed mess, didn't seem to have grown any longer. Maybe I hadn't been asleep for more than a few hours. They would have had to get me well away from the school, I thought. Rolf and his friends might well have attracted attention if they hadn't moved quickly. And how long would that have taken? I worked the problem as I splashed water on my face. Assuming they'd had a carriage waiting, they could have whisked me to the docks and loaded me onto a ship, or driven me out of the city before the hue and cry was raised. How long would it have taken the school to notice I was missing? Magister Tallyman would have noticed when none of us showed up for his experiments, right? Sandy would definitely have noticed when I didn't sleep in my bed. Despair howled at the back of my mind. I was a prisoner, a helpless prisoner. No one knew where to find me, and escape was impossible. Nothing is impossible, I told myself firmly. I'm not trapped until I surrender all hope. Come on, Feruza ordered. Now! I brushed my hair back. Feruza didn't seem to have supplied anything to tie my hair into place, and walked back into the bedroom. Feruza was holding a porcelain jug of water in one hand, and a drinking glass in the other. I took the glass and hesitated a moment before tasting the water gingerly. It tasted normal as far as I could tell. If I wanted to force something down your throat, Feruza said, do you think I couldn't do it? I scowled. Feruza was a magician. I knew that now, and that meant she could force me to drink whatever she wanted. There was no point in trying to limit my intake. Besides, I felt dehydrated. It was a sign, if I recalled correctly, that someone had fed me sleeping potion to keep me unconscious. I supposed I should have been grateful that they hadn't used nastier spells. Drink whenever your body tells you that you need to drink, Feruza said. She passed me the jug as I finished the first glass of water. You need to listen to it. Yeah, I said. I know. She turned away from me, exposing her back. I lifted the jug instinctively, then brought it down on her head, or tried to. A flash of light sent me flying backwards into the wall. I hit the stone hard enough to knock the wind out of me, then fell to the ground, nearly breaking my legs when I landed. Pieces of porcelain crashed down around Feruza, none of them actually touching her body. She'd woven powerful protections around herself. Feruza turned to face me. I do trust that will be the last such attempt on my person, she said, in a manner that reminded me of my grandmother. She'd always sounded more irritated than shocked by childish naughtiness. The next time, I will be forced to take more unpleasant steps. You want me for something, I said, I didn't bother to get up. You won't hurt me. You will be surprised, I am sure, by just how much pain you can suffer without being crippled or killed, Firuza said. Get up. I struggled to my feet. My legs hurt and I tottered when I walked, but I didn't seem to be seriously hurt. Firuza led me through the second wooden door and into what was clearly a private workroom. A large workbench sat in the center, surrounded by a number of forging tools. Bookshelves and cupboards leaned against the walls. I had no doubt that they were crammed with reference materials and supplies. The pattern was familiar. The room had clearly been laid out by an experienced forger. Tools within easy reach, materials on hand, smaller tables that could be moved around for best advantage. It was practically identical to the workrooms at school. I glanced at Firuza as she moved around the room. Had she gone to Jude's? With a face like that, she would have been remembered. Remain calm, I told myself. Dad had taught me what to do if I was ever kidnapped. Gather information and wait. I allowed my eyes to roam the room. There were no windows here either. Five lanterns hung from the ceiling, all out of my reach. Three more doors, one metal, were clearly visible on the stone walls. There were no runes, as far as I could tell, but that meant nothing. The wards might be positioned further away from the suite. Firuza waited, patiently, for me to finish my survey. It struck me suddenly that she wasn't in any hurry. That wasn't a good sign. Rolf and his friends must have vanished already, I thought. He would have covered his tracks as best as possible, but someone might well have seen him with us. What could he possibly have been offered that made the certainty of incurring my father's anger a good thing? They threw away their schooling. For what? Firuza smiled. Why do you think we brought you here? I bit down a sudden flash of pure hatred. A formal exchange of hostages was purely ceremonial, with the hostage being treated as one of the family. He wouldn't be supposed to actually escape. But someone who had been kidnapped would be expected to try to escape. I didn't think they'd be put in a suite attached to a forge. It was more likely they'd be hexed into submission, or simply chained to a wall. I don't know, I said. I was playing dumb. There was only one thing that possibly justified the risk of kidnapping me. You want to force my father to part with thousands of gold sovereigns? Firuza gave me a sharp look that reminded me of Magistra Loanda. You are not stupid, young lady, she said. Why do you think we brought you here? I looked at the forge. You want me to forge something for you? Correct. Feroz's voice was loaded with sarcasm. It was blindingly obvious, was it not? Yeah, I said in a tone that I knew got under my mother's skin. I suppose it was. Feroz didn't show any signs of anger. As it happens, we want you to forge a great many objects of power for us, she told me. And you will do it for us. I rested my hands on my hips. No, I said. I won't. Yes, you will, Firuza said. Or you'll hurt me, I challenged. How far can you go before I lose the ability to work? Firuza met my eyes. Do you really want to find out? The honest answer to that was no, but I knew better than to say that out loud. You can't compel me to do anything either, I added. I wasn't entirely sure that was true, but I didn't want her trying to experiment. A compulsion spell would make it impossible for me to forge. I assumed as much, Firuza said. I had the sudden sense I'd fallen into a trap. She raised her voice. Aiken? Rose? One of the doors opened. Aiken and Rose stepped into the room. I stared in horror. Both of them were moving with strange, jerky motions. They were under a gash. My blood ran cold. Whoever had planned the kidnapping had managed to start a feud with two houses, not just one. My father and Aiken's father might loathe each other, but they'd work together to find their missing children, and very few others would be able to stand against their power combined. I looked at Feruza.
What have you done?
I thought you might need incentive, Feruza said. She indicated Aiken and Rose as they came to a halt. You might be immune to compulsion spells, but they are not.
I swallowed hard. Aiken was seeing me in a nightgown with my hair down.
I felt a hot flush of embarrassment, even though he was wearing something similar. And Rose, she was wearing a nightgown too. I cursed myself as I saw my horror reflected in their eyes. If I'd been more careful, if I'd been more wary, they wouldn't be in this mess. I'd dragged them both into immense danger.
You've picked a fight with Magus Court itself, I stammered.
There wasn't a single family in the city that would risk uniting everyone against it. Merely kidnapping someone from Jude's was quite enough to start a war.
Who are you?
That is none of your concern, Feruza said. Her voice hardened suddenly. You are aware of how Gesh spells work, aren't you?
No,
I said. I knew a little, but not enough to be useful. Dad had banned us from learning anything about such spells.
What have you done?
Your friends will be their normal, charming selves soon enough, Feruza said. But they will do as I tell them, and they will do as you tell them, as long as you don't order them to ignore my standing orders. They'll assist you with your work while keeping an eye on you, just in case you devise a cunning plan. If you do, they'll tattle on you at once.
You...
I stopped myself before I said something she'd make me regret. My friends weren't puppets, but they'd been turned into puppets. No, they'd been turned into something worse. They would betray me at once if they thought I was working on an escape plan, even though they'd want to escape too.
This is outrageous.
I suppose it is, Feruza agreed. She crossed her arms under her breasts. I have two other things to tell you. For starters, she jabbed a finger towards the wall. You don't have the slightest idea of where you are, and I'm not going to tell you. What I will tell you is that we are miles from civilization. If you somehow manage to get out of this place, you'll be in a very dangerous land indeed. I wouldn't care to bet on you reaching the closest town alive. Assuming you're telling the truth, I thought. We could be in a family hall in Shalit for all I knew. The risk of keeping three prisoners in such a place would be staggering. But whoever was behind the kidnapping had already crossed the line. You'd want me to remain here, held by my own fears. How nice, I said. I tried to sneer, like Alana. And what else do you want to tell me? Just this, Feruza said. Her voice turned nasty. Aiken, hit her. I barely had a second to react before Aiken slammed his fist into my chest. I doubled over, gasping for breath. Aiken was strong. I'd known he was strong, but I hadn't known how strong. He'd certainly never hit me before. I staggered backwards, grunting in pain. It was hard, so hard to breathe. Aiken said.
Be quiet,
Feruza said. Aiken's mouth snapped shut. Rose, hit her. Rose slapped me. I twisted, catching her blow on my shoulder instead of my face. It still hurt. Rose was strong, too. She'd slapped me once before, when I'd needed it. Now, I looked up and saw horror written all over her face. My best friends had become my unwilling jailers. I could make them hit each other instead, Feruza said. There was a hint of heavy satisfaction in her tone. Or I could torture them myself.
No,
I managed. It was still hard to breathe.
Maybe I could have held out if it was just me, but I couldn't bear the thought of my friends being hurt, or being forced to hurt me.
I'll do as you say.
Very good, Firouza said.
She turned towards the door.
I'll have food sent to you. After that, I'll give you your first assignment.
She stopped and looked at me.
You are our prisoner, but it doesn't have to be unpleasant, she added.
I resisted the urge to snort. She sounded as though she was trying to be sincere, but it wasn't very convincing.
If you behave, you will be treated well.
Too late for that, I thought. My mind raced, trying to come up with a solution. We have to get out of here.
Chapter 23
I'm sorry, Akin said as the metal door closed. I'm sorry.
It's all right, I lied.
The pain was fading, but the shock would linger for a long time.
It wasn't your fault.
Rose was crying, great heaving sobs that tore at my heart. I reached out and wrapped my arms around her, trying to give what comfort I could. Akin and I had some protection because of our family names, although I had no idea just how much it counted for now. Rose had none. No one would feel any need to placate a commoner family. And, I supposed, if you'd already made enemies of the two most powerful families in the city, you wouldn't really care about a commoner. I held Rose tightly, trying to think. Guilt overwhelmed me. It was all my fault. If I'd thought twice about helping Rolf and his friends... But who would have expected them to kidnap us? They had to be out of their tiny minds. The sheer audacity of the plot staggered me. No one breached Jude's neutrality. No one. Dad had been more concerned with someone trying to take me from the hall than school. I should have seen it coming, but I hadn't. It had been in my, our blind spot. Whoever did this has to be very powerful, I thought. And yet who did have that sort of power? The king? I couldn't imagine King Rufus making enemies out of everyone in Shalit. He could have just ordered me to Tintagel if he'd wished. Everyone else would be far more concerned, surely, about uniting the city against them. What if... My blood ran cold. What if we'd been taken right out of the kingdom? I'd never really considered the possibility, but I should have. Tintagel had enemies, enemies who feared us as we feared them. They wouldn't be happy about Tintagel producing new objects of power, would they? A single object of power, used properly, could change the course of a war. And yet... There was something about Firouza that suggested she was from somewhere a little closer to home. I didn't think we'd been taken that far from the city. But there's no way to know how long we were asleep, I reminded myself. A regular dose of sleeping potion would keep us asleep for weeks, if they were careful. They'd have to feed us somehow, but that wouldn't be a problem. We could have been asleep for quite some time. My mind raced, suggesting possibilities. A week. Someone could have carried us out of the kingdom by that time, either in a carriage or on a boat, or simply moved us to a hiding place in Shalit and waited to see if we could be traced. Dad, and Akin's father, had our siblings, didn't they? I didn't know if Dad could use Alana or Bella to track me. I still had no idea if my blood could be used for magic. But Carioca Ruben had Isabella. Her blood could be used to track Akin, unless we were very heavily warded. I looked up. The roof was bare, but that meant nothing. We could be in a very small part of a very large building. The wards could be blanketing the outer walls, making it impossible for someone to track us down. And yet, blood magic was hard to keep out entirely. I wouldn't have cared to take the chance. I shivered. They had to be very sure they'd blocked Akin's connection to his sister. If they couldn't be sure, keeping him prisoner was dangerous and stupid. They'd have let him go or cut his throat by now.
We'll get out of this, I said, patting Rose's back. But I didn't know how. My friends were my jailers. I couldn't share anything with them without having it passed on to Feruza and her allies. How much do you remember? Rose said nothing. It was Aiken who answered.
When I woke up, the Gesh was already in place.
His voice was raw with anger and bitter helplessness.
Feruza gave me my orders, then told me to wait.
I nodded slowly. Someone smart might be able to find a way to subvert the Gesh, but it would take time. And Aiken would have to convince himself that he wasn't cheating. That wouldn't be easy. Until then, I didn't dare rely on him. He was too smart to be tricked easily, and if he caught on, he'd report me. The Gesh wouldn't let him do anything else. And Rose will be the same, I thought. Despair threatened to overcome me again. I'd only just started to have friends, and now I can't count on either of them. I helped Rose to a chair and told her to sit down, then started to go through the cupboards. As I'd expected, they were crammed with raw materials, wood, metal, everything a forger might need. The layout was definitely familiar. Whoever had set up the workroom had gone to Jude's. The tools were well made, but lacked a maker's mark. I puzzled over that as I inspected an etching tool. Most forgers and artificers would have passed up on a contract rather than produce work that didn't carry their name. And it didn't look as though the mark had been removed. Someone must have shelled out a lot of money to get the tools.
Dad will find us, Aiken said firmly.
He sounded as though he was trying to convince himself.
He'll be looking.
I hoped he was right. Enemy of the family or not, I would have given a great deal to see Carioca Ruben. But I wasn't so sure. Feruza must be someone's client, I thought. It was unlikely her family had enough money, or a title, to overcome the prejudice she would have faced. A girl with no lineage to speak of wouldn't have many prospects, not in Shalit. But someone had clearly seen her potential and given her a job. Maybe she hadn't been trained at Jude's. That didn't make her useless. I wonder if I could talk to her. I considered the possibility as I peered into the second bedroom, Aiken following me like a lovelorn dog. The Gesh wouldn't let him do anything else, I feared. One of my friends had to be with me at all times. They couldn't escape on their own. I wondered slowly if Feruza had left such an obvious chink in their armor. But I doubted it. Anyone willing to use a Gesh on children would have practiced first. The second bedroom was smaller, but had the same basic layout as the first. I guessed I was meant to share my room with Rose, which wouldn't have been so bad if she hadn't been bespelled into spying on me. She wouldn't sleep well at all. I made a mental note to see if I was allowed to sleep without being chained to the wall. If not, I might be able to sneak around while they were sleeping. Rose had slept in a dorm. She'd be used to sleeping through loud noises. Although she would have been nervous about someone sneaking into her drapes and casting spells on her, I thought. I'd rarely slept deeply, even after I discovered ways to protect myself from my sisters. She might sleep very lightly indeed. I kept my thoughts to myself as I checked the bathroom, then walked through the third wooden door. The room was barren, completely bare, save for a lantern hanging from the ceiling. There was no window, nothing except empty walls and a featureless ceiling. I guessed it had been a bedroom, once upon a time, but there was no way to be sure. Maybe Feruza used it as an office, or something. It wasn't as if there weren't hundreds of unused rooms in my family's hall.
I'm sorry, Kat, Rose said as we walked back into the workroom. I just couldn't stop myself.
I understand, I said. I knew enough about Gesh spells to understand that resistance was pretty much impossible. A skilled magician might manage to break the spell from the inside, but Rose was only a firstie. The spell would keep her from even starting to resist.
Don't worry about it.
But you...
Aiken stopped dead.
I...
He winced. He'd clearly wanted to say something the Gesh didn't like. An idea to get us out of the trap, perhaps. Or something cutting about our captors. I wondered sourly if I was truly as safe as I believed. If I was wrong about a Gesh making it impossible for me to work. She might try to find out. I shivered at the thought. If I was wrong, it was over. I wouldn't have a hope of escape. But a Gesh won't linger on me, I told myself. Goading her into enchanting me might be a possible way out. Don't worry about it, I said out loud. I couldn't risk sharing my thoughts with either of them. We'll just have to make do. I heard a dull thunk and turned, just in time to see the metal door open. A young man was standing there, carrying a large tray. I wanted to try to jump him, but I knew it would be pointless. Even if I could knock him out before he could cast a spell, Aiken and Rose would freeze me at once. A desperate bid for freedom would only end badly. The young man showed no expression as he strode into the room. I peered past him and saw a long corridor, heading down into darkness. The walls were stone, as unmarked as the walls in the suite. And that meant... what? Where were we? Somewhere that hadn't been designed for magic? Or somewhere that was so immense that no one bothered to carve runes on the walls? I tried to think of a building in Shalott that might fit that description, but came up with nothing. I'd visited many halls before my lack of power became apparent, yet I'd only seen the public areas. Our hosts had barred us from the rest of their halls. I turned my attention back to the young man. His features were indistinct, as if my eyes kept slipping over his face. A glamour, then. Oddly, I found that reassuring. Our captors were clearly not as confident in their security as Feruza had implied. And yet, she hadn't worn a glamour. Or had she? Someone who'd grown up in Shalott would know what her particular combination of features meant.
"Here's your dinner," the young man said.
His accent was pure Shalott, although there were hints of something different in the way he pronounced his words. Not Rolf, then. Maybe he'd spent time out of the city.
"Bang on the door when you're done."
"Thank you, sir," I managed. It galled me to be polite to kidnappers, but Dad had warned me to keep a civil tongue in my head if I was ever taken prisoner. "May we ask what time it is?"
"You may,"
the young man said. I thought I heard a hint of resentment in his voice. I didn't understand why.
"But I will not answer."
He put the tray on the workbench, then turned and strode out of the room. The door closed with an ominous thud. I listened carefully, but I didn't hear any locks. There must be wards on the far side, I decided, or bolts. They wouldn't hold a magician for long, but they would be more than enough to hold me. I couldn't cast a spell to save my life. "We'd better eat," I said. Feruza and her fellows might have slipped a potion into the food, but there was no point in worrying about it. They'd have no trouble forcing us to drink something, if they wished. "What do we have?" Rose inspected the tray. "Bread, butter, cheese and ham," she said. "And a pot of tea." Aiken made a face.
"Commoner food."
"Farmer food," Rose shot back at him. "It may not be fancy, but it is filling. Make sure you eat plenty. You'll need it." I walked over to join them. The food was very basic, but there was plenty of it. I took a piece of bread and made myself a sandwich. Our captors had told us something important, I realized, as I ate the ham and cheese slowly. We were quite some distance from the city. A poor family in Shalott would eat fish, not ham and cheese. Did Feruza realize what she'd told us, or was she deliberately trying to confuse us? I had no idea. "It tastes good," Rose said. She sounded more like her old self now she'd had something to eat. I wondered grimly if Feruza had bothered to feed Rose while she was asleep.
The cheese is definitely from a farm.
Aiken snorted.
Where else would it come from?
A dairy,
Rose said. Her voice suggested she thought it was a stupid question. But then Aiken had probably never been on a farm.
Farm cheese is richer, but it doesn't get sold very often.
I puzzled over it for a long moment. If someone powerful had taken us from Shalit, were we on a country estate? Surely they'd be searched, wouldn't they? But Dad would have problems convincing aristocrats they needed to open their mansions. My heart sank as I started to make a second sandwich. Searching the city alone would take months. Searching the entire country would be impossible.
If it doesn't get sold, I said slowly, where does it go?
The farmer's family eats it normally, Rose said dryly. My father has an arrangement with the local innkeeper to supply him with milk and cheese, but we don't sell it any further.
I'm sure your cheese is better than this, Aiken said.
He didn't look as though he was enjoying his food. And yet, he finished his sandwich and looked around.
What are we going to do?
We have to do as Feruza says, I lied. I'd have to come up with the escape plan on my own, then carry it out. And then I'd have to find a way to free them from the spell. We appear to be trapped. Rose poured tea for the three of us as I inspected the door. It was solid metal, firmly held in place. I pushed at it experimentally, but nothing happened. It didn't budge at all. Locked in place by magic, then. I allowed myself a grim smile. The more I knew about our prison, the more planning I could do. And who knew what I could do, given time and tools. The tea tasted odd, too. I sipped it, wondering if I'd been wrong about our captors putting potion in the tea. But nothing happened. It just tasted different. Perhaps we were in another country after all. Or perhaps we were just drinking a different blend. My father and most of the nobility wouldn't drink cheap tea if their lives depended on it. And yet, coffee shops and tea houses had been all the rage in Shalit after explorers brought home coffee beans and tea leaves. Everyone drank tea. I'm going to have a lie down, I said, putting my mug back on the tray. You can stay here if you like.
I have to come with you, Rose said dully.
She shook her head. For a second I saw terror in her eyes. She was helpless and she knew it.
Cat,
I understand, I said. I wasn't going to be alone, was I?
Hey, can you start looking at the reference books? See if you can figure out what they want us to make.
What they want us to make, I thought as we walked into the bathroom. Rose followed me, standing so close that I wanted to push her away. They wouldn't have gone so far if they hadn't had a reason to snatch me. There was no second bed, I noted. Perhaps Rose and I were expected to share. I cringed at the thought and made a mental note to ask for a second bed, or at least some blankets. I could sleep on the floor if necessary. I'd sooner sleep on hard stone than share a bed with anyone, even my closest friend. Rose sat down on the chair and watched me as I puttered around, her eyes hard and wary. The Gesh had to be pushing her hard. I lay down on the bed and tried to think. We would have access to tools, wouldn't we? And I knew more about objects of power than anyone else. I should be able to improvise an escape, right? And if I couldn't, I gritted my teeth. How much did Feruza actually know? There were details I hadn't told anyone apart from Dad and Rose. My blood ran cold as I realized the implications. Feruza had Rose under a spell. All she had to do was interrogate her. I just have to hope she doesn't think of that, I thought. Rose was a commoner. An aristocrat wouldn't think much of her. But would Feruza make that mistake? Or trying to extract answers from me by force either? I closed my eyes.
My thoughts ran in circles. Someone had done this, but who? I couldn't think of any suspects. They'd somehow convinced Rolf and his friends to throw their lives away. For what? I couldn't think of anything. Money, power, patronage. That would make the risk worthwhile. Perhaps Rolf had a patron too. It would make sense, him being a merchant's son. Dad would find out, given a chance. It wasn't as if anyone would dare stand in his way. And Aiken's father will be looking too, I told myself. Who would dare to hide from both of them? Slowly, unwillingly, I drifted off to sleep. Chapter 24 Cat, Rose said. She shook me, not gently. You have to get up. I groaned as I fought my way back to wakefulness. Rose was shaking me harder now, driven by the Gesh. I suppose I should have been grateful she didn't simply blast me out of bed. She didn't look good either, I discovered as I opened my eyes and peered at her. Dark rings lined her eyes, suggesting she hadn't slept a wink. I wondered sourly just how long the Gesh would keep her from resting. She'd collapse eventually, Gesh or no Gesh. I'm coming, I managed. My throat was dry. What happened? She's outside, waiting for you, Rose said. It took a moment for me to realize that Rose meant Feruza. She wants you outside now. I swung my legs over the side of the bed and stood. The lantern seemed dimmer somehow, although I knew it could be just my imagination. I hadn't slept well. I'd dreamed. I couldn't recall my dreams, but I knew they'd been bad. My legs felt wobbly as I tottered towards the door, Rose walking behind me and jabbing her fingers into my back every time I slowed. I knew she didn't want to do it, but I still felt angry, and yet there was nothing I could do about it. Feruza was standing by the workbench, wearing a long black dress, and looking surprisingly imperious with her hands clasped behind her back. She looked striking, I had to admit. She would have been the belle of the ball in high society if her family lineage had been well established. Instead, her eyes tracked me as I made my way towards her, feeling as though I hadn't slept a wink. Aiken stood by the wall, unnaturally still. I'd have thought he'd been frozen if I hadn't seen him breathing. Good morning, Feruza said. I trust that you had a pleasant sleep. No, I said stiffly. Rose and I require more blankets. I tugged at the nightgown. And we also require more clothes. They will be provided, Feruza said. I'd expected an argument. Maybe she'd just been waiting for us to complain before she found newer and better clothes. Are you ready for your first assignment? I glared at her. Do I have a choice? Feruza shrugged. Not really, she said. She tapped the workbench, indicating a sheet of paper. I want you to forge this for us. I took the paper and inspected it. I'd seen the design before, several times. A ward cracker, a powerful ward cracker. I didn't think there was a single ward that could stand up to it, if the ward cracker was shoved into the spell form. There were devices of power that were designed to knock down wards, but they tended to shatter if the magician using them didn't get the spells exactly right. I'd heard stories about incompetents who'd blown off their own hands while trying to rob magicians. It will take some time, I said carefully. And I will also require tools. Feruza's eyes narrowed. You have tools, she said. She pointed at the selection on the table. Is this not sufficient? I need better tools, I told her. I'll have to forge them for myself. Really? Feruza said. She looked at Aiken. Is that true?
Yes,
Aiken said. His voice was curiously flat. The Gesh was in full control.
Her tools are designed to assist in forging objects of power.
Feruza looked back at me.
And you can forge these tools here?
Yes, I said. It wasn't hard, given the right materials. The real question was what she'd do with them when I wasn't working. I could do more with my homemade tools than outsiders might realize. That will take a couple of days. Then I can start work on the Wardcracker.
Very good, Feruza said.
She eyed me sharply.
What else do you need?
Privacy, I thought. But I wasn't fool enough to say that out loud. I have to ask her for things I can justify.
My spectacles, if you kept them, I said.
And any of the other tools I was carrying when you kidnapped me.
They weren't brought here, Feruza told me.
I winced. I thought she was lying, but I wasn't sure. She'd be unwise to just give them to me in any case. The dispeller alone would have been worth its weight in gold. She would certainly have wanted to ask more questions before letting me have them.
Then I have to build some of them too, I said.
I did my best to pretend to be cooperative. But after that I can get started on the Wardcracker. Feruza never took her eyes off me.
Why do you need them?
I can't sense magic, I reminded her. I was fairly sure she knew that already. And if I can see the magic, it's easier to forge. Whatever else Feruza was, I decided as she bounced question after question off me, she was definitely a trained forger. I'd had vague thoughts about forging a suit of armor and breaking out, once I managed to find a way to put it together without my friends noticing. But Feruza was too well trained to miss what I was doing. Anything I build would have to be more subtle. The thought made me smile. I could do subtle.
You may as well start now, Feruza finished. Unless you have something else you need.
Her tone suggested, very clearly, that I better hadn't. I made a show of looking around the room, then shrugged. I'd need more materials and potion ingredients sooner or later, but I didn't have an excuse to demand them now. I made a mental note to come up with a list, the more outrageous the better. It would be interesting to see what Feruza could and could not provide.
I need them to keep their distance, I warned slowly. Aiken and Rose could help, of course, but they couldn't do the work for me. If they get too close, the spell form will be distorted.
Really? Feruza said. Her voice was biting.
And do you think I'm going to let you work unsupervised?
They can watch from a distance, I said. I would have bet my share of the family inheritance that she had the suite under constant surveillance. There were plenty of ways to spy on someone, particularly if you knew where they were.
But if they stand too close, the spell form will not take shape.
And nor will the object of power, Aiken said. I wondered if he was trying to help. Maybe he was. He'd be helping her too, on the face of it.
I wasn't able to help her build a simple object of power.
I see, Feruza said.
They can brew potions for me, I said quickly.
I didn't want her thinking that Aiken was useless.
They just can't stand too close when I'm working.
Very well, Feruza said. She waved a hand at the cupboard.
You can start making your tools now. If you need anything else, just tap on the door.
So someone is right outside, I thought. Feruza was the second person to tell us to knock on the door. Unless... I watched as she turned and left the workroom. Was there only one person? The waiter could easily have been Feruza, her face hidden under a glamour. But Rolf and his three friends were also involved. Feruza probably wasn't alone. I simply had no way to be sure.
Aiken,
Take one of the cauldrons and start brewing a cleansing potion, I ordered. I doubted I could get either of them to make something dangerous, but combining two otherwise innocuous potions could have interesting effects. Rose, brew an etching solution and... Rose's face went blank. I have to watch you, she said. She stumbled as her face returned to normal. Cat, I can't... Don't worry about it, I said. I pointed at the wall. Just stand there and watch. I was going to have to be careful what I said to them, I reflected, as I walked to the cupboards and started to gather my supplies. They'd do whatever I said, as long as it didn't interfere with their standing orders. I didn't know if Feruza wanted to give me servants or give them incentive to be angry at me, but it didn't matter. I had to be very careful indeed. Akin went to work with practiced ease. I felt a flicker of envy, then turned my attention back to the workbench. They normally didn't take that long to devise and forge my own tools, but this time I was going to stretch it out as long as I could. I needed time. Time to think. Time to plot an escape. They definitely spent a great deal of money on this place, I thought as I stacked up a number of gemstones. Did Feruza know I'd found a way to produce stirrers that didn't actually need to be charged? I hope not. Rose knew, but she wouldn't say a word as long as she wasn't asked directly. And if I can charge a number of gemstones with magic, I can do quite a bit with them. The door opened, revealing the glamoured young man. He passed Rose a stack of clothing, then departed as silently as he'd come. I put my work aside and hurried to change into something a little more suitable. The nightgown wasn't bad, but I was uneasily aware that it would provide no protection whatsoever if I splashed hot liquid or molten metal on myself. Rose followed me, changing as well. The clothes were definitely not from the richer part of Shalit. And completely impossible to trace, too, I thought, as I eyed myself in the mirror. I'd grown too used to tailored dresses and school uniforms. I looked like I was wearing a sack a demented tailor had turned into a shirt and trousers. It was the sort of thing a tradesgirl would wear, not a daughter of a great house. Would anyone recognize me if I managed to escape? It was a chilling thought. People would recognize me in Shalit, but anywhere else? I was just another young girl. If I didn't wear noble clothes, would anyone recognize me as a noble? Or anything? It was just something else that cut me off from my former life. I caught myself sharply. I was not going to give in and surrender. I was going to escape, and I was going to take my friends with me. I walked back into the workroom, just in time to see Akin finish his potion. I took the cauldron gratefully, then let him get changed himself, while I started to work on the rest of the tools. They took shape one by one, while Akin and Rose took turns brewing different potions and watching me. I had Rose charge a handful of gemstones for later use, hiding them in the stirrers. With a little effort, if I was very lucky, I would never have to drain the gemstones until I actually needed them. It would be fascinating to see what happens, I told myself, if I combined the two designs. The minutes turned into hours, and the hours slowly turned into days. We stopped working long enough to eat and sleep, then returned to our work. I took 2 days, I thought it was 2 days, to design and forge a number of tools, then ran out of stalling tactics. The ward cracker design lay in front of me, mocking me. It was complex, but nothing I hadn't done before. The sword I'd forged had been a great deal harder. Rose, cut me 9 strands of gold wire, I ordered. I wasn't sure that her cutting the wire would weaken the design, but it was worth trying. And Akin hexed me. I fell forward, hitting the stone floor hard enough to hurt. My hands and feet were suddenly stuck to the floor. I looked up, just in time to see Akin's fingers, clearly moving against his will, casting a spell. The world went dark. I couldn't see a thing. He'd blinded me. You may not sabotage your work, Aiken said. It was the Gesh talking.